It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
You're locked on to Hans Olsen and Scotty Chin.
That's right, yeah!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Apologize for the technical issues. Joining us now, he is the head coach of the Utah State Aggies, Blake Anderson. Coach, thanks for hanging in there with us. How you doing?
I'm good. Sounds like I'm doing better than y'all are this morning.
Oh, geez, man. Place is falling apart. Guess these bright, nice, shiny studios and nothing works. That's great. It's awesome.
I got you. Well, hey, we're in here, man. We're in here.
All right. So you got a lot on your plate, Coach. Let's start with spring ball. How's the first week gone for your guys?
It's been good. I mean, we're not very good at anything yet, but that's kind of the nature of installing a brand new defense in less than a month. Coach Koth Joe and Mitch got here when Banda left for Cleveland, and so we did not have a lot of time. They've crash coursed it, and I've been really pleased with the defensive guys. They've done a phenomenal job of trying to catch up quick. The players, a lot of time in the building, playing with high energy. I think they like the just the subtle changes and adjustments to what we're doing, and seem to be taking on to it pretty good. Offensively, it's not a wholesale change, but it is a change. I mean, new coordinator, me stepping in, quarterbacks, there's enough different that it is new, and a couple new coaches, as you know. So they've kind of had the same challenge. Defense is ahead of the offense right now, which is typical in spring and fall camp. But I've been pleased with the new bodies, the guys working hard, good energy at practice every day, and they've been coachable. So it gives us a chance. We'll see where we go in a week or two.
So, Coach, when you lose your offensive and defensive coordinators and you start into your search, do you look for guys that have similar philosophies, or do you look for guys that you've got ties with? How do you go about that search? What are one or two of the things you put in place first?
Well, it's unique. I mean, offensively, me being on that side of the ball my whole career, I have a very strong idea of what I wanted. And so in this case, I stepped in and knew that I wanted to take over the offense. I was really happy if Tuck decided to stay here and work with me. Also understood by me taking over the offense that he might choose to leave. And he did, and landed at Indiana in a great position with Tom Allen and Walt Bell, guys that I know. So that was a little unique. If I were going out to hire a coordinator from the outside, then I would have very specific parameters of what I wanted. And to be truthful, not sure I would. I would probably just run it if I didn't have somebody I felt very, very strongly about. I've elevated Kyle Cefalo into a co-coordinator's role and preparing him to become the coordinator in the very near future, whether he ends up coaching quarterbacks or calling ball plays at some point in the next few years. I don't know, but I'm perfectly happy running it and calling it. And coaching the quarterbacks, I actually like it. I enjoy being in there. I enjoy calling it. I love the strategy behind it. Probably would not have stepped away from it in the first place had Wendy not gotten sick and had us dealing with cancer for 3 years. So defensively, I think it's a little different. I don't claim to know defensive side of the ball. I know it from an offensive perspective. And in this case, when I knew Ephraim was leaving, it was within – I mean, I knew before Ephraim took the job. When I knew he was even being interviewed, I knew who I was going to hire. I mean, Joe Cawthon and I have been together and known each other since early 90s. We worked together intimately as assistants. I told him then, if I ever become a head coach, I'm giving you a call. you know, 17 years later, I got a head coaching job, and it nothing had changed. I just respect him that much. And he has he's a four down guy, which fits our personality. He's coached with some great folks. He's got a tremendous track record, a national championship at Valdosta, two conference titles with me at Arkansas State, just a relentless worker and great teacher. And so for me, being in the offensive room all day, every day with the quarterbacks, I needed somebody I trusted completely. And Joe's that guy. And it's proven to be a great fit for our personnel and our kids.
Blake Anderson, head coach at Utah State, joining us. I want to back up a little bit. I always joke about that Matt Wells once told me that Valentine's Day was kind of the date where he felt like he could breathe easy on assistant coaches. That has not been the case for your club. And Ephraim Bonda, when the Cleveland Browns call and the NFL calls, you got to take that phone call for sure. But how has it been like to try to, you know, you bring in guys that I know you like and you trust, especially in Coach Cawthon, but that's got to be tough to try to transition on the fly, especially late in the game like it has been.
It is, and I think early in my career, I probably would have panicked a little bit and rushed. I tried to take a deep breath and sit back. We've got some guys on staff that have been off the field waiting an opportunity, and so one of those guys is getting that right now, and Ethan Morris, we moved him into the safeties room. He coached his own position at lower levels, and when I was able to hire him, I've just kind of been grooming him, getting him ready, and he's doing a phenomenal job, and maybe he ends up being the guy. If not, I'll look at it after spring and take my time and hire the right fit. It is not fun to be going through in the middle of spring, but it is the nature of the cycle and the calendar. It just seems to get pushed back more and more every year. And so we're dealing with transition. LaMarcus Hicks goes to Northwestern. Great job. Ephraim goes to the NFL. Great job for those guys. I wish them the best. Just don't panic. Take your time. Hire guys you know fit us, our personality, are going to teach, are going to pour into the kids. And so I think it's just the nature of having been a head coach for 10 years now. Probably would have rushed a little bit in the beginning. Maybe I did at times try to seek wise counsel, take a deep breath, pray on it a little bit, and feel like we made the right choice, not the fastest choice.
Tough things for coaches now is you've got assistant coaches that are going – any which way, and now you've got players that can go any which way, and I know you kind of lost a linebacker late in the game as well. How have you settled into the transfer portal usage and just the world of transfer portal that we're currently in? Do you feel like you've got a pretty comfortable place in it and how to handle it, or is it still pretty raw every now and then?
Well, it changes and moves. That's a trap question, by the way, man. If I answer yes, then I've lost my mind. It clearly helped us win a championship in year one. It did. We don't win the championship year one without the additions of the portal and even saving guys out of the portal that were already currently here and leaving. So in one breath, I tell you, man, it's the only way we raise the trophy. It has obviously hurt us some since. The addition of NIL money and the recruitability of guys that are currently on your roster to take money other places has added another dimension to this that's really difficult. And I don't care what people say, there is tampering and recruiting and offers being made to guys on rosters, including ours, before they've even stepped a foot in the portal. And we're not in a position to be financially competitive with some of these offers. And so it's created a challenge that is real. It is very, very difficult to maneuver. And so my approach has been treat them great, recruit them and develop them, do everything we can to facilitate, you know, opportunities for them here in the Valley. And there are some, but at the same time, if they feel like money's what they want and they're going to chase it, then we're going to play and coach with the dudes that choose to be here. And we're going to find a way to be competitive and win regardless. It is definitely different than what I signed on for 10 years ago. It's even different than 2 years ago. But it is the world we're in, and so you got to try to maneuver it every day. Do I have a handle on it? Heck no. I am juggling it like crazy, trying to figure out a way to create an edge, but also control what you can control, and that's a pretty small area inside that big, big circus that we're dealing with.
So a week ago, your world got turned upside down a little bit with Josh Davis. collapsing on the field. You and I texted a little bit a week ago and talked about the miracle that took place, and we relayed that message on the air. But honestly, there's a lot of things you're juggling with coaches and NIL and all that stuff. At the end of the day, it all got pushed aside for a young man and his fight for survival. But kind of walk us through the roller coaster of that day, which ultimately led, and I think we can all safely admit it, and I think we all have religious beliefs, but it sounds like there was a higher power at work about a week ago.
I can tell you without a doubt that God stepped in a huge way and saved a kid. I really thought when the ambulance pulled out of the stadium, I thought we lost him. I did not think he – there was twice during the 20 minutes of CPR and five shots and frantic just efforts to save him. There's twice that I thought we'd lost him during the process. And then he just wouldn't quit fighting. He just kept fighting. So – you know, we had a press conference yesterday and really talked about it. He had a seizure a year ago and was checked out a million different ways, and docs couldn't find out anything and said, "Hey, you're healthy. Go back to work." He's done great. He was actually having a tremendous off season and had caught a touchdown pass a couple of days before and in work and just doing great. We were in pre-practice, just barely warming up, hadn't even broken a sweat, He obviously had another one of those seizure type episodes. And when he went down, his body just responded very violently and he didn't come out of it. Well, our staff did an amazing job. Mike, Brady and Kendra just did not hesitate at all. They immediately went to work on him and did everything they could in terms of life-saving measures all the way down to, like I said, to CPR and end up actually having to paddle him five times during a 25-minute period. And we stayed right there with him praying and talking to him, and he fought like crazy. But I will tell you that every doctor I saw at the hospital over the course of the weekend, and we were there pretty much when life stopped. We just shut it down and really prayed and supported him and his family through the course of the weekend. Every doctor said the same thing. Number one, your medical staff did an amazing job. If they would have hesitated at all, he would not make it. But he is a walking miracle. I think he'll, obviously it's a matter of perspective. It gives all of our kids a glimpse of how fragile life is, and it's not promised. And you mentioned faith. I absolutely have shared with them and my staff that man, you need to know Christ. And that if you took your last breath today, you know where you're going to spend eternity, man. I'm not going to shy away from it. That's the platform I stand on. And if you don't see it in front of you in something like that, then your eyes are not open. So he came to practice actually yesterday, 2 days ago, and was here walking and hugging dudes and at the press conference yesterday. And it's just been amazing to watch how the kid has recovered and fought.
How do you handle the parents and the kid at this point where I'm sure they've got questions about his future? And do you leave it open-ended? Do you make some hard decisions? How do you handle it from here, Coach?
Well, we would obviously, you know, Josh is a walk-on kid. So financially it's really up to them. Do they want him to continue to be a part of our program? We have welcomed him to be a part in any way that he wants to. I'm not sure that he'll ever play ball again. Doctors are not completely certain on that. I think he knows there's a very, very small chance that he plays again, but we would find, I mean, he'd be a great student assistant, and we'd find a capacity for him to be a part of the family. If he was on scholarship, to be truthful, then we would be in a very similar conversation. We've got several guys that cannot play football anymore that are on scholarship, and we medically DQ them but continue to work them towards a degree and try to make sure that just because football stops, their life doesn't stop and their career opportunities don't stop. So that would be our approach. I don't know what other people's are, but that's how we've handled it. And I've been really pleased and proud of our university that they have stepped up and continued kids towards their degree and helped them move on, even though football has been taken away from them in some physical way.
How it feels kind of silly going back to football after that conversation, but
we got to, man. Life still goes on.
I know, right?
I think that's something we all got to remember. I mean, you set things aside and you go to work, but then it's just like having lost Case and having lost my wife. I mean, I had to get back to life. You can't stop it because bad things happen. And we do that every day in football, and this is no different.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you working with us. Thanks so much for coming on. Look forward to further conversations throughout spring and getting up there and watching some practices. Thanks for your time.
Come on, if you can get through the snow, come on, we'll be here.
that's a big F, Coach.
Doing everything indoors right now, Coach? Are you out on the field a little bit? You have to take it indoors?
Well, we're going to have to go inside today. We were outside 2 days ago, Nick. It got nasty at the end. We've had two outside practices and two inside. We're going to be inside today. There's a good 5 inches of snow on the field as we speak, hoping that the sun breaks out at some point soon and we see spring. I was told that spring officially started. They hadn't got the memo in Logan yet.
Yeah. Well, they haven't got it down here either. I mean, I think last year you probably didn't have to have any indoor practices.
We had 10 outdoor practices out of 15, and it was 79 degrees, I think, this week last year in spring ball. So we're hungry for that. I'd be happy for it to show up anytime.
Well, appreciate it, Coach. Again, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks.
There you go. Blake Anderson, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I don't know if people understand the trauma that he's been through.
Yeah.
And then you throw that in with a player. That probably hits different for him because he just recently lost his son.
Yeah, lost his wife.
Lost his first wife. And knows a little bit about having to deal with loss. And he's seeing one of his players there on the sideline having to be paddled, what do you say, 5 times in 25 minutes?
Yeah, yeah. I think 20, actually.
And even after they got him in the ambulance and drove off, he made the statement on air with us moments ago that he thought he'd lost him.
So let people behind the scenes a little bit. I did not talk to Blake, but I had talked to people that were there at the situation. And I called you that night to tell you kind of what was going on.
Yeah.
And what was told to me is that we don't think he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know you've got connections to some members of the team, and I think they told you the same thing too.
Yeah.
Like the general consensus was this young man is not going to make it.
Yeah.
And
that was very much the vibe.
And not only did he make it, but he's out of the hospital and he attended practice. Now, again, you heard Blake allude to it. I've heard from other people too. The chances of him playing football again are slim to none. But that's okay because you're alive. You're alive, and that's ultimately the biggest part. You're going to have quality life, and you're going to be alive. You're going to be able to have a family, hopefully welcome some kids into the world, yeah. And all of those things are going to be available to you.
My guess is that's going to take him a long time to adjust and digest that because
I know.
I can't.
As a 21-year-old, that's a tough pill to swallow. Yeah, I get it.
I can't imagine waking up. Having fought, and Coach was saying that he was making some real strides in spring ball as a walk-on, having fought and put in the time in the weight room, and then having the first episode, which I had not heard of, and then coming back from that episode, getting stronger, feeling good, and then having the second episode, waking up from that and coming to the realization that it might be over. There would be thoughts in my mind because of what football meant to me of, I don't know, like that, it was my life. Because I didn't have a wife at the time. I didn't have really anything going. I didn't really like school. I wasn't interested in a degree or another profession. And if I woke up from that moment and somebody said, and this kid's got way more going for him, so he's definitely not in my shoes.
Yeah.
And said, hey, yeah, you're alive, but this is the end of football. That would have taken everything I had, and it would have taken all my family's power to try to stabilize me again. So I'm sure that that is a huge loss for him, probably underappreciated by a lot that are talking about this situation with this young man. And I feel terrible that he's going to probably lose that part of his life.
That's true. And again, it's easy for somebody that's in their 40s or 30s, you know, whoever, people around him, his parents and things like that, to say like, no, it's all right. But this, when it's your life and he's been battling for a scholarship, I do think that's right. And that's a good thing to put that in perspective because it's easy for us to look big picture because we've got more life experience. For somebody who this is all that they've looked forward to their whole life and to be taken away. Yeah, that can feel a little condescending to say. That's a good point.
Yeah, because I think of it from now a dad's point of view. If that was my son, and we talked about it in that moment, if that was my son, I don't give two craps about football.
Yeah.
All I want is to be able to hug him and kiss him. But when he comes to and you have to tell him that his whole life is changing, that he has to deal with that loss. That would be really difficult.
I do thought it was cool about how Blake or Coach Anderson essentially said, though, like, you know, we understand this can be hard. So you want to get into coaching? You want to be a grad assistant? Let's go. And essentially said, we will offer up everything that we have available to him on this team so he can still feel part of the team. And I know that's, again, to your point, that's still a really tough pill to swallow, but it is also a way to say, look, you love this game. Let's continue to love this game. It might be a little different, but let's find a way for you to still be involved and be part of this team.
You think about it, it could open up doors that would not otherwise be open, for sure. Hopefully he can see it from that perspective and be able to take a look at this and think, man, I wouldn't have had these opportunities if this didn't happen. And I know it's tough to find the good in it, but man, Coach Anderson is very open about his faith and his belief, and he was very expressive in that. And I think that this young man is going to have to do the same and believe that there are going to be doors open and there's still a lot of life and excitement for him in the game of football. The game of football ended for me at the age of 30, and I found a way to continue to be a part of it. He could do the same. He could still love this game, be a big part of it. And I would expect him to do that. And it sounds like Coach Anderson is offering him those opportunities, which is really great.
Yeah. Also interesting point too, where I know that this is not an overly common thing. I do believe everybody in the state does this, but it was good to hear Utah say, I believe BYU and Utah does this as well, but I know there are some schools that don't do this, that if a player suffers a career ending injury, the Utah State still honors the scholarship and gets him graduated. There's a lot of schools that I know of, and again, I think Utah and BYU do this as well. But if you do have an injury, they say, "All right, well,
a career-ending
injury." Sorry, but you're going to need to go find somewhere else, or you're going to have to pay for your tuition.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see those continue to be eliminated with NILs and transfer opportunities and everything else that is now giving the student athlete a little bit more advantage. It always felt like the university extended it. I will tell you, if you're out there, you're being recruited or you got a kid that's being recruited, it's one thing you might want to ask that university about.
And maybe that's not something you ask the coaches, but when your kid goes on a recruiting trip, that he asks the players.
Yeah.
Because the coaches go, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. But there's not a binding agreement that they have to do that. Like, I don't believe that's in writing. That they would do that. But if your kid goes to a school and he hangs out with some other guys and he talks to his host on that trip, like, hey, man, have you heard guys get hurt? And what do? Do they kick him to the curb or do they at least get him through school so they can get a degree? Like, oh, yeah, man, absolutely. They've taken care of a buddy of mine. Or, no, man, they told him to get lost and or pull out the credit card and pay for tuition.
Because it is something that is just a whisper away.
Yeah.
For anybody out there that's playing this game. This was non-contact. This was one of the more bizarre situations that you could ever find yourself in.
We've heard, out
and waking up and saying, geez.
We've heard two accounts of it. Jerry yesterday said it was a passing drill, went up for a pass, came back to the sideline and just collapsed. Non-contact. Just like that. And I think some of the details, I mean, it's pretty harrowing, honestly. Let's be honest.
Well, it's also a testament. And you know how I feel about training staffs?
Yeah.
I feel like they intervene too often. I feel like they make too many in-game judgments and take a lot of the rights away from a kid to make that judgment. So I have some criticisms towards on-field medical staffs. But this is the perfect example why you've got to have the right staff and the right equipment in every given moment in these training sessions. and the amount of money that goes into it,
yeah,
and resources that go into it. Look, what's it worth to you? What's this kid's life worth? I don't know the exact amount of money that sits on that sideline and that goes into the pockets of these medical professionals and having to have the ambulance close and all those things. But if it saves one kid, geez, it's worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
This kid's, he would be gone. And this is from his own words. I saw him on a cut last night. He would be gone without immediate medical assistance in that opening moment when he went down. If he doesn't get the necessary CPR, he'd be gone. If he's not gone, his brain would have gone without oxygen, and he would essentially be gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So the fact that he's walking around and is able to talk to friends and walk normally, I will tell you, too, this is really great news for Utah State. Because if this kid would have passed, or if he would have been rendered helpless and guys would have had to go visit him in the bed and he's not able to communicate, and now you're seeing this face that you love and he was this great athlete, it just tears at the seams of a team, and it continues to pull and distract. Where this young man is walking at practice and saying hi to his teammates and his best friends and giving them hugs, you now have a responsibility on that field. It's like, oh, he's okay, and we get to see him here in a minute. Oh, and he's going to be at the party this Saturday. Let's go to work. There's no distraction.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Let's go to work.
If anything, it's a nice rallying cry.
It is. It really is. I mean, having him come around, and if he is jumps on as a GA or whatever he ends up doing, whatever role he plays for the team, it's great. It's just, it's hard to have a rallying cry when a teammate passes.
Yeah.
I went through two teammates passing in season, and both of them disrupted everything. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really matter. When it happens, it doesn't really matter. And that's one of the problems with it, is you kind of throw your hands up and you're like, what are we doing?
Why are we even doing this?
What are we doing?
Yeah. Well, and especially in your two cases, it was a car crash and then the brain tumor, right?
Correct.
It was unrelated to the game of football. Imagine if it happens because of the game of football.
Even worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, even worse, because then it's like, so could this happen to me? I'm similar to him. Sure. Even worse.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, like, I'll be honest here, Hans. I mean, I'll just full disclosure here. Like, I had questions about quarterback. I had questions about what the offense is going to look like. And I wanted to circle back, and you heard me kind of say, well, you know, maybe we get back to football. And he goes, I know you have to, because, you know, I lost my wife. I lost my son, nearly lost this player. And I'm like, I'm not talking any more football.
Yeah,
like,
it's done.
Like, I know. And it just shows you, again, I have such admiration. And this has nothing to do with wins and losses. It has nothing to do with a conference championship 2 years ago. It has nothing to do with any of that. I have such huge admiration for Blake Anderson. I consider him a good friend. I've been around him a lot over the last 2 years doing the play-by-play. We do coaches' shows and pregame interviews. Like, I really, truly think of him as a really good friend. And I know you do as well.
Yeah.
And to see how he's able to still coach a football team with all the tragedy that he's gone through, I couldn't even finish the interview. Like, I didn't want to talk about offense anymore. I didn't want to talk about how's Cooper Legault looking and what's Bishop Davenport doing after that. I couldn't, you know, when he said, you know what? Yeah, because you got to compartmentalize. I've had to deal with this and this and this. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't want you to do it in this interview anymore. Let's just shut it down. Because I just can't imagine the pain and anguish you've got to go through. And then to be able to say, okay, with all of that, let's still go out and coach football. I have such admiration for him.
Lost his son about 3 months before fall camp?
No, it was almost a year to the day. Honestly, it was like late February. No, it was like early March of last year.
I was saying 3 months before he went into the fall camp. So he lost his son, and then he had 3 months and went into fall camp?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, July. Yeah, 3 or 4 months around there.
You know, in that time, you and I had some conversations, but I was talking to an individual that was close with the team, had a kid on the team.
Yeah.
He felt like Blake Anderson was not going to coach the team that season. Probably not through fall, and maybe not through the season. He felt like there was going to be a change or something, interim help or something. And for Blake to bow up and say, you know, my son's in God's hands and it's time for me to go coach football, that's a really big boy way to handle things. It's a tough, tough way to handle things. There were a lot of people that didn't think he was going to coach the early parts of fall.
And if he didn't, we'd all understand why.
Yeah.
All right, 12:47, Hans and Scotty, take a quick break, come back. We'll have an update on the other side regarding Salt Lake Bees baseball. They're supposed to, first pitch is about, or was supposed to be 13 minutes away. If you looked outside, ain't great. We'll give you an update really quick. Coming up next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Your home for Real Salt Lake is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
March was a bad month for RSL. Three straight losses. They'll try to get back on a winning track Saturday, April 1st, in Columbus to face the Crew, who just annihilated Atlanta 6-1. The pregame show will start Saturday at 4:30 on 97.5 The Zone. First kick at 5:30.
Looking for the latest on the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies?
Yeah,
we've got you covered. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the Sports Zone.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Time for another edition of what you may have missed right here, Hans, and what you will, probably be missing today. It's a little Salt Lake Bees baseball. Maybe. I don't know. Clowkey's there on the scene. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well. The field was completely white about, I'd say 2 hours ago, but I can actually see green grass. There is still some snow in the outfield. No decision has been made. The gates are open for people who do want to come, but it looks like we're going to be on hold for a little while. I know they've already moved the Utes game down to BYU for tonight, so they're giving us a little bit more of a window to get the game in here. But how late they'll wait, I don't know, but I don't think they'll wait all that much longer, maybe another hour or two.
Yeah, is there an official moment? Is there kind of a deadline that they finally decide, no more, we're calling it?
Not really. They'll confer with the two managers and get their thoughts on it. Once the lineup cards are exchanged, it's always in the hands of the umpires. But up until then, it's in the hands of the front office here. And both the Angels farm director and their general manager are here, so I'm sure they'll have some input as well. But really, until that time the lineups are exchanged, it's in the hands of the folks here upstairs.
So, again, no word as of yet in terms of whether it'll play today. I know you don't want to speculate. I'll speculate. I'd be a little surprised, but who knows? You know, hey, it's Utah. If you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes, and, you know, you might see something different for sure.
I was going to say, when I got here today, my first thought was the only way we could have a game here is if you painted two blue lines and a red line out in center field.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, maybe put a dome out in daybreak, I guess, maybe.
That would cost a nickel or two.
Yeah, just a bit. Well, Steve, all right, so if it doesn't go today, do you think doubleheader tomorrow or Sunday, or how do you think it plays out?
I think it would be tomorrow. I think the weather's supposed to be good. Temperatures in the upper 50s, and I think they would try to get two in tomorrow. Maybe start a little early so that the Utes don't have to move their game as well. So, again, nothing official, but that would be my guess. And Sunday looks like it should be okay to wrap up the series before we go on the road. And beautiful weather planned, at least on the forecast, for both Albuquerque and Vegas.
Steve, you've been doing this a long time. How many times has snow been an issue for a non-start?
I would probably say about 7 or 8 times over the years. We've had some, I think there was one series a few years ago with Reno where I think we got 2 of the 5 games in between the snowflakes.
Wow. Interesting.
Matter of fact, the players here for Sacramento, they went out of the field early and made a snowman out in left field. Because for some of these guys, they may not have seen snow before.
Oh, that's a good point. Absolutely. Well, again, if you don't follow Steve on Twitter, I highly suggest you do so. You can follow him at SLB's Radio, And you can get updates there. We will update it as well on all the Zone accounts. But, Steve, appreciate you hopping on, and hopefully we're able to get some baseball in today.
Thanks for the update.
I hope so, too. And, Hans, congratulations on your new gig. I couldn't have picked anybody better.
Oh, I appreciate that, Steve. Means a lot coming from you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
There he is, Steve Klauke, voice of the Salt Lake Bees. Again, not an official stoppage today. They're delayed as of right now. The game was supposed to start at 1 o'clock. According to Steve, they'll probably try to give it another hour or so. Another interesting note, too, is that the BYU-Utah baseball game has now been moved to Provo. So that game will go on down there. It will not be at, you know how hard it is not to say Smith's Mobile Ballpark.
It just flows.
It really does.
I can see why Jake messed that one up.
And now it's just been so much fun to say over the years that.
And it is spring, so it's really time to spread your wings and get out to Smith's Mobile. Yeah. Love you, Jake.
Oh, boy. So good. So there you go. What you may have missed right here on the Zone. Hey, unable to knock out our starting lineup earlier today. But, of course, as always, starting lineup is, you know, brought to you by our good friends at Lee's Heating and Air Conditioning. And, again, if you need to get that tune-up, now's the time to go to leesheatac.com.
Bowler joins us next. We'll go through the Jazz injury report, tell you who's off the court tonight for the Boston Celtics game.
It's all straight ahead, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.